Welcome to episode 7 of Talking Prisoner Presents. This guest needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway. He's best known for his long-running roles in some of Australia's most popular TV shows. He's appeared in smaller parts and guest stints in other shows, but he is best known for his role in A Country Practice, The Flying Doctors, Out of the Blue, and currently Home and Away. We're, of course, talking about Shane Withington. Welcome to Talking Prisoner Presents. Thanks for coming on. Welcome, Ken.
What a great pleasure. I'm very flattered, honoured to be here and to meet both of you.
Thank you so much. The fans are very excited that you're coming on, and we have a lot of questions for you, so we will get stuck into it.
I'm flattered to hear that.
What was your childhood like? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Toowoomba in Queensland.
Okay.
My mother was a cowgirl and who's the daughter of a very famous drover. So that side of the family were on the land. And my dad was an English club singer. He worked in food processing during the day, but sang in clubs at night. And he was a soccer champion and still holds the record for the number of goals scored in the season in first grade in soccer in Queensland. So, we lived in Toowoomba on the Dividing Range. I was only ever going to be factory fodder, I believe. That's sort of how we were educated, that you'd only ever, work in a factory and do what the rest of the town did. But I had a real passion to get out of there. My first job after being, I suppose you'd say, expelled from high school was to be a horseman and a jackaroo in North Queensland. And that all ended in tears when Cyclone Tracy, or a cyclone, came and destroyed the property. Came back to mum and dad at 15 years of age, going, I don't really know what to do. And mum said, look, here's an advertisement for a scholarship, an acting scholarship. And you've always been in the amateur theatre. And it was the Elizabethan Quest Scholarship. And I went down and auditioned for that scholarship at 16. I had to do two contrasting pieces, comedy and drama, and a song and dance routine. And I remember going to the theatre, with a huge professional theatre, which blew my socks off. And I did my two contrasting pieces. And we did a few improvisations with a whole lot of other people. And then time for the song and dance routine. I'd chosen Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. And I had this routine. And so I had my little dreadful cassette recorder and went backstage, are you ready, Shane? We're ready for your song and dance. Yes, all fine. Plugged it in, but of course, backstage, all the PowerPoints, as you all know, are operated from dimmers and other boards and things. I couldn't get any power. And I said, I can't get any power. And they go, never mind, just do it without the music. So I popped my umbrella and I'm going. And I died. And I was downstairs going, damn. And from out of the window, it's a true story, an ice cream van came past playing Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. And I raced upstairs and, hey, I've got the. And I'm doing the dance. And I said, look, Shane, settle down. We may as well let you know you have won the Elizabethan Quest Scholarship. And I went, So that was my introduction to acting. And that was fantastic. Wow. Stop me if I get too interesting, but I'll go on a bit about that.
This is great.
We were a little theatre company, and we were the last theatre company, 12th Night Theatre, to tour by train. And we would get, all the actors would turn up at the train station, put all our clothes and everything in our sleepers, the sleeper carriages, and the next carriage would have all the sets and a vintage car and props and all that business. And we'd go choof, from Brisbane up to Cairns and back, touring. Sleeping with Miranda Otto on my knee, Barry Otto playing opposite me in something. And it was an amazing time that will never come again. I don't think other actors will ever tour by train. But we'd pull up in each little town like Gympie and Nambour, and the local CWA would come out, all those women with those, one breast and those smocks that they wear, and bring us chicken and champagne. And every day, twice or three times a day, we'd get chicken and champagne. Oh, thank you. And the train would shunt off up the road about 5 miles, and all the chicken would go out the window and we'd keep the champagne. So it was a tremendous and a tremendous training, because it was unorthodox. It was run by Joan Wally, who was a beautiful human being. And I would do an hour's tap, you know, and an hour's voice class, and I'd do an hour's mime, and I'd go and learn blah, blah, blah. And so when I left 12th Night Theatre Brisbane and came to Sydney, I was fairly well skilled in a lot of things I had to know as an actor.
Wow, what an experience.
Well, then I came to Sydney, and then I auditioned for Theatre on the Sea, and there was a ship, the Fairstar, that sailed around the Pacific with three plays on board in repertory. And so we'd learn the three plays, get on board, live on the ship, and do three plays on a stage that used to roll like this, and doors would open, and bridges would open, and things would shut. And that was a tremendous, you know, early experience for a young actor to be able to do that. And we just did shows in rep, three different plays in repertory on a ship. So that was a joy.
I don't think there's many actors that can say they've been on a train and a ship acting.
Well, when I first got on board the ship, being a chancer, I looked at my cabin. Of course, on those commercial cruise ships, the cabins are like cupboards. Yeah. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll live here. I don't like it. But then I realised that the set on the stage was a bed, because we're doing Girl in My Suit, a bed, a fridge, a kitchen set, a lounge, huge across the whole width of the ship. So basically, I packed up my gear and moved it down onto the set, put my clothes in the cupboard. We managed to wire the fridge up, and the curtain would come down at the end of the night. And be right, okay, go to bed. So it was just the luck of the draw. That won't happen again. I don't think we'll have theatre companies touring on ships. I'm lucky to just catch that edge of it.
Wow.
I was going to ask you about your school days, but it seems that you and school weren't all that happy together. So can you tell us what your hobbies are, if you have hobbies and any time, and what do you enjoy doing in your spare time?
Oh, I'm a sailor. I'm a single-handed sailor. I've always enjoyed, from the fair start, when I got on board that ship, I realised that every piece of salt water is directly connected to every other piece of salt water. And so I had a little ship. I could go anywhere I liked. And so I came back from the ship and I bought my first sailing boat. And that has just been a prolonged passion of mine. For many years, timber boats, which I adore, but I've varnished my last mast, I'm afraid. I'm getting too old to varnish masts. And so now I have a little Beneteau 31. And I sail offshore. I sail alone, and that's my child. I adore the peace and quiet of being in my game. I'm surrounded by 100, 200 people a day. Everybody, which I like. But how valuable is solitude? Just to be totally, utterly alone. A lot of people don't like it, but for me, outsmarting the elements, I adore. Just, you know, being on your own little ship, which I would never thought as a boy I would have my own little ship where I could go anywhere. Wow. That's what I do for Shane. I'm a passionate activist for heritage conservation. I've had several big fights over the years to save and conserve what I consider, you know, our beautiful heritage. Lost a bit of bark here and there. But I'm still very passionate. I fought for 15 years, it's now 25 years, to conserve a union holiday camp with its heritage buildings on it called Currawong Beach. It was going to be a gated community for the very rich. And the place started out as a place for working class families to be able to afford a beachside holiday in a cabin. And I thought it was important to maintain that part of egalitarian Australia, and had a long, 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 hard fight over that, which we won. It's remarkable, but generally in New South Wales, you don't win heritage fights. And that's been conserved. It's now become a state park, and I'm on the board of the state park. I'm on the board of Currawong to run it, you know, add my meagre talents to running it. And making sure that it's still accessible to working class, working. And I don't like the term working class, working families. still be able to go to this wonderful historic site.
That's amazing. Going back to your sailing for a minute, what's the furthest you've gone? How far have you gone, sailed?
I sailed to Vanuatu, which was via New Zealand, just off the tip of New Zealand. That was a delivery. And that's a story. One day, we haven't got the time now to go into the whole consequences of that trip. But we were knocked down twice on that one. We got we sailed into a cyclonic depression, which is a pretty serious piece of weather. But we were supposed to be 14 days, but we were 21. We'd lost communications. We lost our water. We were knocked down, as I said, twice. Eventually found our way. The skipper, I was in a crew. The skipper was a tremendous navigator. Unfortunately, he had some other faults that I was alerted to after the trip, and that's a whole other episode of what not to do. But sailed that, got home. My sailing now, because I work so hard-ish, is limited to sailing up and down the coast of New South Wales. So I'll go to Port Stephens, Port Hacking, and just take it on. It's scary. I often, I wonder why I'm out there. I'm harnessed in. I'm hanked in. I've got all the safety gear. I've got the auto helm, which sort of works, but not in a bad sea when you need it. And often I'm out there and I look back at the coastline and I can see all the lights on, the people with their families having dinner, eating steaks and drinking wine. I'm out, 10 miles off wondering why I'm there. But when you come in, it's the sense of achievement that, well, I did that. I did that on my own. The other reason I sail on my own is because when I really stuff it up, no one can see. When I am crying and panicking, go, oh, no, I do that. This is horrible. No one else sees that. So I can always step off a hero. Do it again tomorrow. But I adore that. And as I say, the solitude and solving your own problems is very good for me.
That story you're about to tell sounds like a scene out of Home and Away.
Which one?
The Vanuatu one.
offline I can tell. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, you got the time, yeah.
When I delivered the boat and came back, and then I got a knock on my door from the federal police saying, we would like to talk to you about the yacht Seal and $11 million worth of drugs imported into the country. What? And what had happened was that the man who asked me to deliver his boat was a villain. And what he was doing was removing his assets out of the country. They just wanted the yacht out of the country. And some drug deal was happening afterwards. But the police thought that we were involved, and of course we weren't. So I came home and got the whole, where were you? What did you? And surveillance photos of course, completely innocent. But always check a boat if you're delivering it. That's the story.
Well, thanks for sharing. Do you like to cook at all? Are you a cook at home? Do you cook?
I'm not. I love cooking. I do stews, which I quite like, casserole stews or roasts. Nice. For the boat, I'm always cooking up little stews and have them packaged and frozen, ready to go. So if the weather window opens, I'll grab one of those and go. We holiday quite often on a farm near Mudgee, near Sydney, and that's got a wood stove. The wood-fired stove, and my mother cooked every single meal for us till the day she died on a wood stove. And we can't even think of that now. We just click, 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 it's all there. And I take great delight in going and cooking roast shoulder of lamb or a goat out on that farm we rent, and think fondly of my mother, who put a lot of effort into keeping fires going. And I do a terrific duck. I'm a duck king.
Make me hungry.
Come on.
Be careful how we say that. Is the farm your favourite holiday destination, or do you have another one?
Well, boat. We will sail away and be alone, number one. But, farm's right up there. That's beautiful country. Because I was born in the country. I was originally a horseman, believe it or not, a jackaroo. I love it, and I'd like to. I'm often torn. I want to go and live in the bush. It's so beautiful and quiet. There's a pattern for me here, quiet and solitude. But it's a lovely 1860s stone house. I don't think I'm going to afford to buy it, but it's a joy to rent and share with other people. But That's my favorite place. We're also lucky enough here to live in a national park. Wow. And so we're often bushwalking and being in the park. And it's Ku-ring-gai Chase. It's very big and very beautiful. So that's my third happy place. So I haven't got to go far. So when lockdown occurred, the 3 months when we couldn't work, it was the happiest time of my life, basically. I couldn't work. I didn't have to work. I couldn't look for work. There was no work. It was only look after yourself. And the three things I enjoy, and I had to be within 5K of your home. The three things we adore is sailing, walking in a national park, cooking. So we were one of the very few groups of people who loved being locked down.
Yeah. Some people enjoyed the lockdown. I know you probably don't have a lot of time, but do you have a favourite TV show you like to watch in your spare time?
Home and Away. No. Favourite TV, that's... White Lotus was something we watched. Have you seen White Lotus?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Blowout. We're big on documentary series. I'm big on documentary series. We just watched The Staircase. And if I can recommend, I think it's on Netflix, a documentary about a murder. But from an actor's point of view, to watch people deal with these things and lie is terrific, because you would never think of playing it like that. If I had to play the guy who was guilty who did this, I'd choose to play it this way. But when you see the real McCoy, they're very, very talented, skilled liars and conniving. I'd just be in tears if someone accused me of doing what I did. I'd be useless. To see these people, I enjoy that. But countless other television series, and we eat them like everybody else. We binge like everybody.
Definitely.
Have you ever actually done any theatre work as well as television?
Yeah, I did theatre until my daughter was born, really, and then I needed to earn money. So my scholarship in Brisbane was all theatre, and so I worked with Barry Otto and all sorts of other people. And I came to Sydney and I did. In the 80s, it was quite a different world for actors, because in those days you could do a play for a while, make a bit of money, then do a couple of voiceovers, then do a little bit of theatre restaurant, then pop down to Melbourne, because Grundy Crawfords would have something happening in Melbourne. So it was always a Crawford show, and you pop down to the Crawford show. Sydney had Grundy, there'd be a Grundy show. Adelaide always had something on there. So you'd nip in and do a guest, it'd carry on for a while. Then you'd get another play, another little voiceover. It was, you could eke a living just jumping between the different cities. And just to show your head, it wasn't done on a computer screen. You used to fly to Melbourne or drive to Melbourne with your little 10x8 and meet the producers and go, I'm here, I can do that. Yeah. So that's, I've wandered from the theatre question, but yeah, every actor did theatre and loved it until, as I said, my daughter was born. I just needed to pay off a mortgage, and so I moved more towards television. But I've always loved television, because coming from a theatre background with the scholarship, I remember coming and making television in Sydney for the first time, and you could act in the street. It was so liberating not to be in a theatre, not to be on a set, to actually be on a location or be, I was thrilled, but I do like television. I like it as a medium. I love the words broadcast, because that'll go. We're broadcasting and free to air. It won't be free to air. It will be on a subscription channel. It will be. I think I may even see the end of free to air television in my lifetime. So I like the whole idea of going to air. There's not much romance in television, but terms like going to air, broadcast, and free to air, they're the words I like.
Yeah. Yeah, just as talking about theatre, as someone that's been in both TV and theatre, do you think an upcoming actor should try theatre first to equip themselves for TV? Yeah.
Yeah, without doubt, because theatre's one take. You can't go, whoops, I'll go again, which is the great comfort we have in television, and not many in Home and Away, because we work hard and fast, and you don't get many chances to go, can I do that again? But yeah, it's a one take. And you'll hone your art in the one take. The difference between theatre and television is every time I've done a theatre play, on opening night, there has always been that 15 minutes where I've stood staring down the stairs thinking, if I throw myself down here now, I'll break my arm and I won't have to go on and face that audience. That's the difference between, that never happens in television because of the second take, because you can always go again.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, I always spend a bit of time staring down this, not that I've done a play for a long time, but the ones I've done, I've spent a fair amount of time checking the stairwell out on opening night.
Now, you played, speaking of TV shows, you played Simon Wilson in Out of the Blue in 2008, which is a series about a group of 30-year-olds at a school reunion, which comes to an abrupt end when someone is murdered. You were the lead investigating officer over the entire series. Now, also, this show was created as a replacement for Neighbours on BBC One in the UK because of Neighbours' move to Channel 5 at the time. What was it like?
Didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. What was it like being on that show?
Oh, that was hard work. I've still kept the scripts.
Really?
Because as a leading investigator, I had to have so much dialogue. I couldn't believe how much I could run and get them now. I know where they are. And I thought, I would be up at 3 in the morning. How am I going to shoot all this? How am I possibly going to do all this interviewing? Because it was all names and times and dates. And I'm useless at all of that. It was really hard work doing that show out of all of them. It's still hard now on Homer's because John's a talker, which is lovely. I created him. I want him to be a yap, yap, yap guy. But some days you look at it and go, oh, goodness, I've got to learn all that before tomorrow. I enjoyed Out of the Blue. It was terrific fun to play an investigator. And I said to Ben Hawke, who's a dear friend of mine who was head of news and current affair running ABC, I said, oh, Ben, I've got a new job. I'm playing a senior sergeant in this show. And he said, well, how old are you? And I think I was 50 at the time. Well, you must be useless if you're still only a senior sergeant. Oh, thanks, Ben.
You also played Harry Green in Rain Shadow in 2007. Can you tell us about that?
I just thank you for mentioning Rain Shadow. I think that's, as an actor, often you'll get scripts and you'll go, you'll read them, especially in Australia, and you'll read them and you'll go, I can make that work. Yeah, I can make that work. It's rare for me that you get a script where you go, oh my god, oh, I cannot wait to play that. And that was the whole Rain Shadow experience with, you know, wonderful Rachel Ward, and it was a really good cast. Gary Swade, me, and basically everybody, and it was a delight to work with. And the producers were fantastic. They would turn up on location and go, hi, everybody. Gus Howard was one of the producers. And I'm remiss. I forget the second producer's name. But he turned up in a biplane. We were filming it in Adelaide, north of Adelaide, and he flew from Melbourne in his biplane to see how we were all going. And everything's all going well here. Oh, we're having a good time shooting it. All right, well, bang, there's a case of wine. Bye. It was just remarkable. And they were delightful people. It was a beautiful show. I really adored playing Harry Green. I just adored. And I nearly got the second series. How many times in your life has that happened to me? Nearly got a second series. And Harry Green was to feature a lot more. But they were happy days shooting that show. It was a terrific show.
Well, you were just talking about the amount of dialogue you have to learn sometimes in a script. What's your technique for learning scripts? Do you have a special?
Well, yeah, every actor's different.
Yeah.
I call it eating pies. It's like eating pies. I don't like learning lines. So I'd rather be sailing. I'd rather be gardening or anything but cooking, anything, cleaning, anything but learning lines. And so it's got to be a quick process for me. And luckily, I've always been pretty good at learning the lines. I see on a page, I highlight the page, and then in my head when I'm doing it, I can see the big speech, then there's two small ones, then there's another big one, and sometimes I can sort of see what the speech is about, but the shapes and sizes of the page I remember help me know where I am with the lines. I'm pretty good at it. And the brain grows neural pathways. Like if you do something every day, like plumbers know that Cook runs downhill. If you do something every day, your brain develops the pathways to do it better. And we're all pretty good. Lynn McGrange's funny in the show because I'm not telling tales out of school, but when Lynn pulls her script out, mine's just got buy eggs on the way home or Shane's script written on it. But Lynn's is highlighted, the cues highlighted differently, her lines highlighted differently, the stage direction will be a different color, there'll be a few notes on it. And then basically she goes and makes it up. That's of course not completely true, but she's always a bit whoa and waiting for your cue is a bit that must be it. She's creative, and I adore her.
Yeah, she's amazing. Now you played Bob Grant in Dog's Head Bay. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that was a tough one. I'd sort of given up television because I said I had a daughter and I needed to earn, and I did a lot of voice work, a lot of voiceovers, which paid the house off, helped us a lot. But I got a call saying, do you want to play a lead role in a new ABC television series? And, well, who doesn't? But I'm sort of keeping out of television. Who wrote it? David Williamson. Tick. Who's making it? The ABC. Tick. Who's directing it? Simon Phillips, the head of the Melbourne Theatre Company.
Wow.
Tick. Yeah. And you'll get like a 3 weeks workshop before you start the show. Okay. I'll do it. But as everybody knows, Dog's Head Bay turned out to be the biggest failure in my career. It just did not take off. It just did not work. It broke our hearts. We worked really hard. We worked so hard to make that show work, and it was a heartbreaker, that one. I did my best. We all did. We all did our best.
The Flying Doctors. Tell us about Mike Lancaster and how did that come about?
Great show.
It was a fantastic show, and I was really pleased to do it. I don't know. That was with Harry M. Miller. My agent at the time was the legendary Harry M. Miller, who said, you want to go and do a bit of Flying Doctors? And I said, how much money would you be happy with? Oh, I don't know. Oh, I got you triple. All right, get down there. That was dealing with Harry, bless him. I love that. It was shot. What actor doesn't like working? I mean, we all have very fond memories of 99.9% of our show.
Yeah.
But that was, a funny thing did happen. With respect to all the cast of The Flying Doctors, they were a bit clicky because they'd been working in their show for so long and they're friends. And from A Country Practice on, I always make a point of any new actor, any guestie, any extra, anyone who's not part of the everyday team, I always make an effort to make them feel welcome. I think that's our job because we do call them guest artists and they are our guests. But there was things going on, but they were always just a little picky, I thought. Nice. And so this is a true story. I was in makeup and they're sort of being ignored, and the publicist comes running down from Crawford's and goes, Shane, we've had a phone call from David Bowie's PA, and he wants you to go to the concert on Saturday night. And no idea. And they're all listening. And I think I went, that is so typical of David. So typical. No notice whatsoever. Saturday, oh, all right, well, Hannah. And of course, ears are going, what? David Bowie. Tell him I'll be there. How many people can I take? Of course, everyone was my friend immediately. They wanted to go to the Glass Spider Tour. That's one of my favourite memories from Flying Doctors. I loved it. I really enjoyed that, shooting that.
Yeah.
And enjoyed David Bowie's party as well.
Can we talk about that? Or?
Yeah, well, it was all you can imagine. David Bowie and Ziggy Stardust? David Bowie and Iggy Pop, I think, well, David would always have the show recorded on DVDs, no, cassettes, what they call them, DVD tapes, and sent to Switzerland where he was living, and he would watch them at home with his wife and family, and they adored country practice. And so when he came to tour, he wanted to meet the cast. And so he said, I'll ask these people, unbeknownst to me. And so I went to the Glass Spider tour and just met, I was out of my depth with David Bowie's entourage. I don't have to say that, sure. But the most beautiful people I've ever seen, the most talented people, these incredible people who were, you know, wow, number one at their game, and me standing there trying to have a conversation with David. But it was a great, great night, full of all sorts of enjoyments and fun. So, again, really lucky. We had morning tea with Michael Jackson. We were doing a telethon in Perth. And Robert Holmes, the court at the time, owned the rights to all the Beatles music. And Michael Jackson wanted to buy all the rights to the Beatles music.
Yes.
This is where I come in. And Robert Holmes, the court, said, yes, you can buy, but Michael Jackson has to come to Perth. He has to appear at the telethon and donate something as a part of the deal. And Michael Jackson reluctantly agreed to come and do that. And so we were there and they said, oh, do you want to come and meet Michael Jackson? At that stage, I thought we were bigger than Michael Jackson, but we'll go meet Michael Jackson. And we turned up at Robert Holmes Court's house and we had very proper morning tea. And then a big black limousine pulls up and they virtually fog hopped him, I remember, out, a bit sunshine. Gosh, it's very hot. He kept saying, oh my goodness, very hot in Australia. I always thought he sounded like Mickey Mouse when Michael Jackson talked. Hello, everybody. Pluto, Minnie. But he stayed. We had tea and had a chat with Michael Jackson. And they broke off him back out into the car. So that's been a great part of the career too. Just those incidental clips with greatness and great stars. Yeah, Elton John, Phil Collins. There were always just these fabulous times when you cross in a television studio. And I've been lucky. It's lucky. It's very lucky now.
Wow. You've had the rock star life.
Only for one night. Yeah. And every Logie.
I'll get to the Logie shortly. Now, can you tell us about Willing and Able, where you played Abel Moore? The UK fans of this podcast probably haven't seen it, but have you got any memories about that?
Oh, boy, do I have memories of that. Boy, we were co-producers on that show and with Harry M. Miller. And I remember Harry M. Miller pitching the deal. For those who don't know Harry M. Miller, he was a big celebrity agent and a lot of fun, a lot of trouble, a lot of everything. He'd be a huge personality. And when we and Grant Dodwell, Lynn Bayonis, Ted Roberts, and I left A Country Practice, we had an idea to put our own show together. It was called Willing and Able, about two men who lived on a ferry on Sydney Harbour and did odd jobs for a dollar. Fantastic concept. And I remember being in the office when Harry Miller pitched the show to each of the networks, and he'd ring up Channel 7 and go, oh, how you going, mate? Did you walk under a ladder? Oh, Channel 9 are just offering me big money for this great new show. Then he'd ring Channel 9 and say, did you walk under a ladder? Channel 7 have been all over me now. he rang around to get the money. He was very successful at it because he got us, at that time, big money to shoot the show on film. We leased a ferry to shoot it on Sydney Harbour. And I loved the storylines. It really deserved a much better fate than it got. It was a very clever, it was Rebecca Rigg was playing, was in the show. Grant, a lot of really top line actors. There was a lot of things happened there too, because we're working on the waterfront in Sydney, and the waterfront in Sydney is a highly unionised and can be a complicated place when you're dealing with ferries and boats and stuff. And I remember day one, we're all really nervous because, of course you're nervous.
Yep.
I'll talk to you about day one of Out of the Blue too. Day one of Willing and Able, we're co-producers, we put a lot of money into it, our career, our big next step. We turned up to our ferry to shoot on this wharf, and we leased a finger wharf on Sydney Harbour, those beautiful big old historic buildings. We had the whole thing. we owned it. Like, we could sleep in it and have makeup rooms in it. And now Russell Crowe lives in one. It's inconceivable that you could do that now. We turned up on day one. There's a great big burly bloke standing by the gate with an enormous padlock on the gate, day one of the shoot. And we went, hi, we're here. What do you want? Oh, we're here to shoot our TV show. I'm from the union, the Waterside Workers Union. And in order to have that boat, which had a big ferry, which was tied, it didn't go anywhere, it was just tied and we shot on it. You need a forward hand, you need this many crew, you need that. Otherwise, yeah. The last person, and one of our grips said, I'll cut the lock. And if the last person to cut a lock on this wharf had his head shot off, something along those lines. So we then agreed to pay for the additional crew that just sat around and did nothing. We adored shooting that show. It was just the highlight of my life. I just think it deserved a better run than what it got. I think it was a little bit before its time. I know a lot of people say that about shows that don't work, but I think now that it may have been before its time.
Geez, those unions sound like something out of the mafia in New York, the building unions. And
you could say that. I couldn't possibly comment. Having fought the union movement to conserve the heritage site on Currawong Beach, we had a pretty hectic time with them too. Wow. They play hard.
Yeah, amazing.
And the first day of Out of the Blue, as I said, it was a huge role, a lot of dialogue. I was quite nervous. Jeffrey Nottage, one of the directors, took me into the set the day before just to acclimatise myself. And he showed me the set and the cranes and the cameras and the lights that would lift up and roll all down to one chair. And that would be the chair I would be sitting in. That's you. So everything's around this guy doing the investigation. So you go, whoa, don't want to blow this. And so day one, I turn up, park outside the studio, open the door of my car, and the door hits a paper wasp nest, and about four of them went bink onto my face, and bang, and stung like I was hit by lightning. So I swelled up like, I don't know, another animal, an elephant man. Ran inside, had bags of ice on my face, trying to get it down for day one. I'm already nervous, but bags, and three cameras dropped that day. They had to be repaired, so it wasn't a very auspicious beginning, but I never forget lying in the makeup room with three bags of ice on the face. You're on. Oh, okay. Nice.
Oh, wow.
Considering that you've done so much, do you have any other career ambitions that you're hoping to achieve, or are you quite happy to stick with Home and Away?
That's a question I ask myself daily. I mean, it's at Home and Away, 99.99% of the people are just fantastic. The crew would have to be one of the best television crews in the world. They really know what they're doing. It's been a great delight to have all the young actors come through and see their ideas and steal their ideas before they go. It's marvellous. The young kids that I work with, I've been so lucky, they all keep in touch with me over the whole. I've been here 14 years now.
Yeah.
Every one of them still keeps in touch and gives me a call, and that I've made lifelong friends out of them, and I've loved that. I've been treated with a great deal of respect, and I like that. And I still enjoy playing John Palmer. I still have plans for him because he's an egotist, he's vain, he's jealous, he's all these wonderful things that I get to do that I try and hide within myself. But I am also vain, jealous, greedy as John, but you don't show it. At least with John, I can it's like a therapy class for my alter ego to go running. So I still enjoy that. I still have a lot of plans and hopes for his future. But if that were to end tragically, as in the case of Neighbours, boy, that's a blow to the industry, that one. But if the show were to end, or the producers in their wisdom were to decide to flick me onto the scrap heap of show business obscurity, then I would probably go elsewhere. Might sail away. Today, I'll sail away. Other days, I'd like to make a film or something. It's I don't know.
Do you think we can see, do you think some Neighbours cast will appear on Home and Away now? Do you think that's going to...
I hope so. I know we're inhaling some of their crew. be nice to have a few of them. It's all, we were so, we were hurt. People think that we were in competition with neighbours. No. We're all in the game. We wish them absolutely every goodwill. But we were all devastated. We sent our support on social media and things, but you know, that's technicians, cameramen, makeup artists, writers, wardrobe girls, shoemakers. It's a big blow to the industry, and hopefully we'll be able to pick it up with something else.
Yeah.
But that leaves, I think, long form drama. I think it's only Home and Away now. I think we're the only ones that are doing it.
And just when you said you sent your message of support, that actually is well talked about between fans on our Facebook page, saying what a gentleman Shane is, you know, that, and they've screenshot your message and saying, you know, he's not even on Neighbours, but he's sending support out.
Oh, well, it wasn't just me. I'll take the credit. Oh, much nicer than that. I'll take the credit, but we all felt terribly for them. It was such an iconic show, and will we ever see it again? That's the thing. I hope we do have more long form drama like this. I think people need it and like it.
Yeah. And just interesting, one of the houses in Pin Oak Court, which is Ramsey Street, up for sale at the moment for $1.4 million.
That's cheap.
Piece of history.
Yeah. The Castle House keeps getting sold everywhere too, I know.
Yeah. No, that, yeah, it did. Now, this is, of course, it's called Talking Prisoner, and Ken and I started out just interviewing cast from Prisoner and crew, but now we're branching out because there's so many other amazing TV shows and people like yourself. But did you ever watch Prisoner at the time? Was that a show you
Yeah. Well, the Prisoner, we all meet up at the Logies, you see. We all meet up at the various telethons and functions and things. And no, I know Maggie very well. I knew, I can't, too many to name. But we always had a great, what actors do, we always had a great relationship with people in other shows. Great to meet up and catch up and find out what the goss is and who's doing what. We love Prisoner and love the cast. We've known many, many of them as friends.
Great.
Had you ever watched the reimagining of Prisoner, Wentworth?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry. Bits, but no, I didn't.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, don't stress. Now we're going to get on to Home and Away and the Country Practice. You've played John Palmer in Home and Away for over 13 years now, in well over 1,600 episodes, which is a huge amount of episodes. What drew you to the role of John?
Oh, well, I came straight out of the blue. I came straight out of the blue, and then Cameron Welsh, one of the producers, was in the car park and said, hey, do you want to come and do a bit of Home and Away? And I said, yeah, but I don't want to just do 12 weeks. I need to know, I want to plan my future. I don't like 12 weeks. And he went, oh, okay, well, how about a year? And I went, I'll do a year. And the reason I did that was because just once in my life, I wanted to have a paid holiday for my wife and daughter. I wanted to be in a show long enough to get paid a holiday pay and go on holidays being paid. That was one of my main drivers. Then I arrived and I thought I hadn't been watching Home and Away. And my initial fear was I'm going to have to deal with bad scripts. Here we go. This is going to be hard. And this is, oh, how am I going to make that work? But I touch wood. From that day forward, the scripts have been, you know, we get the odd bum scene or the odd bum line. Of course you do. But, gee, I tell you what, I've got to give a great big tick to our writers for coming up with this every day, day after day after day after day. And really, it's still interesting. It's still exciting. I still look forward to playing in. There's still a bit of mystery there. Look, you know, all credit to our producers and writers.
Yeah, it's got some amazing stories. You wonder where they all come from.
Yeah, and they still don't seem to be rehashing them. They do a lot by reading the paper and finding things in the paper that have happened. And so a lot of it's based on fact, which people don't realise. All of John's stroke line and stuff is fact. A lot of cases that you read about in the paper go, we've just shot that.
Wow.
So lucky.
You also first played Colin Page in Home and Away in 2006. Can you tell us how you got that part?
Yeah, well, Colin Page, you know, playing a tough guy. I was never comfortable as a young actor playing romantic leads because I looked like a dropped pie. I would never like that sort of thing. I wanted always to be a character actor. And as I got older, I'm managing to do playing characters. But yeah, playing Colin, he was a bit butch for me, and I loved playing him. But I got the chance to work with Chris Hemsworth. And a very fond memory of that is seeing Chris Hemsworth standing there in all his muscular glory, and I had to fight him in a ditch. And he's standing there between takes, punching trees. Like, these trees about that thick. He's going, punch, like that, and the whole tree's going, wonk, 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 wonk. I'm going, what a fight this guy. I just want to get punch on the tree, wonk, wonk, wonk. I'd really like to play like a gladiator, you know, punch, or a warrior, or some sort of, you know, superhero type, punch. And then he beat the tripe out of me in a ditch, and he's gone on to play the biggest.
Big superhero around.
Superheroes, yeah. I have other stories about Chris, I think myself.
Did you have to audition for John, or you just got the part straight up?
No, I hadn't auditioned for a long time. No, that was an offer for Cameron.
Yeah.
People know what I can't do. They know if they don't want me. They go, well, no, I don't want you. But if they look at me now, they know I know what Shane does. He does things. Oh, that could work. Okay, we'll look at Shane. But yep. I'm very rarely in the room for something I can't do. But lucky.
Yeah.
Did you get any character breakdown for John beforehand?
Oh, yeah. It would be a very different character than what I'm playing now. There was. He was the ex-Navy severe father.
Ah.
He was quite a strict father to the boy, Trey. It was Trey at the time. He's gone on to make movies everywhere too. And I thought, yeah, I can be ex-Navy. I can be father. I can be tough. Won't have legs. They won't want to see this guy every week if he's just tough and severe. I don't want to play that. You know, I want to have fun. And so I made him ex-Navy, severe dad, funny. And that's what I want to be. It gives me joy. If I can come on and make someone laugh, if I get one laugh out of one scene, my work here is done. That's what I want to do. I want to make people laugh. I want to make people, you know, enjoy having fun with John. I want him to be a fun character. I don't want him to be, you know, romantic lead or obviously, or a severe, strong, angry man. Yeah. I want John to be, oh, there's John. And it's lovely. When I walk down the street, people look at me and they laugh. Oh, oh. I think that's because of the character I play in Home and Away. I just think it may not be, might be because of the way I look, but I think that's because of John. And that's a privilege. And the same with the country practice. I mean, I would have thought people would forget about, or sometimes I feel a bit like Gilligan, because people go, hey, country practice. Are you still learning from a country practice? I'm gray, I'm wrinkly, I'm old. You know? But every single day, someone will go, and often they'll go, hey, thanks so much for that show. And you think, wow, you know, it's been worthwhile doing it all. That's nice. Nice.
Now, we covered my question, so I'm going to ask you another one. Do you have any flexibility on Home and Away to create storylines for John, or the way you want John, the direction to go? Do you have that? You know, you're such an established actor. Do you have that pull? That's what I'm...
No actor has pull in any situation, anywhere on earth, ever.
Okay.
I play John the way I play John. They do give me a leeway. If I come up with a nice line or hear a nice line, I heard a line the other day from someone who was in a queue in an airport, and the man said, hey, I've been to Brisbane and Melbourne, and this is good coffee. And I thought, oh, that's a great line. So John, next week, I hope, he will be saying, look, I've been to Brisbane and Darwin, and that's good coffee. So I like that. I'm always suggesting storylines. But, of course, the writers, that's not my job. It's just them to do their job. And they take a few of them in. John's getting involved in some neighbourhood watch. I want John to be neighbourhood watch, because I had this lovely idea that John's driving along, and out of the car, he's got a neighborhood watch shirt on, sees two women punching the tripe out of each other by a tree. And so John goes, hello, can't have this. Leaps out of the car, walks up, bang, drops one of them, and then looks around. It's a boxer size class. I just wanted to play that scene. Got that. So I'm trying to talk them into getting that done. I've got magpies. I'm surrounded by magpies at the moment.
Look. Oh, wow. Geez, that looks so peaceful out there.
Very lovely. Very lucky. Lucked out buying here a million years ago.
Wow.
Tell us what the best thing about being in Home and Away is.
For years, I sailed to work. That's pretty good. That was great. I could jump on my boat, sail up the night before, have dinner, have a sleep, row ashore, do my scene, jump on my old boat. Not a big yacht or anything. It's not a big fancy thing. It's just a little boat. And then sail home. I was just thought, this is tickety-boo. With all the crew watching me sail away, I go, you get to work your way, I'll get to work my way. The other thing is the camaraderie is just, it really is. It's tremendous. Like every show, really, there's that bond that bonds people together. There are ructions and coups and all sorts of things that go on with any group of people that are confined in that way for such a long period of time. But the camaraderie is a delight. And the moment you walk in, the humour, the crew are merciless with us, with their humour. They are the rudest, cruelest judges of our performances. They're wonderful. It's all taken in good light. We get reviews like sports stars sometimes. Some of the cameramen will say, well, here comes Shane. He's coming off a string of bad performances. We hope he lifts his game today like a footballer. It was shocking last week, shocking. Let's hope he, it's all that wonderful camaraderie. That's the best thing. Being so close to locations, I sort of live in Summer Bay, that's marvellous. It's only a 20-minute drive or sail up the bay. Working in the studio in the city's harder. That's like a full-on commute into the city. That's hard. But can you hear my magpie?
Yeah, I can hear that. Yeah.
The commute ends a bit tough, but I'm certainly not. I'm not going to whinge about it. I'm really enjoying the show. I'm so lucky.
Yeah.
A thousand actors would kill me to get this gig. There's not many roles in long form television for 60-year-old men. There's one, two. Ray's got the other one, and I'm privileged to have it.
Right, Ray, who has been in prison in three different roles too. What's it like working with Ray?
Oh, is that what Ray? Ray's good fun. Ray's got on a good wicket. No, he's good fun. He's very good. Of course he's very good at it because he's done nothing but television his entire life. So he's got wonderful tips, even for an old hand like me. He knows how to shoot the scene and get out, be in his car and on his way. He knows where to stand so the camera will shoot him out first. And I say, oh, how do you know? Well, he's done that. He's got the three shot and then we're clear because I'm clear, then I can be out, I'm going to go home. And so I always hang next to Ray because, as he says, you want to get a good barrier draw at the end of the day. So he's good. Nice man. They're all good. They're all good people.
Amazing. John's done a lot in 13 years. There's a lot of storylines, a lot of episodes. But what are your standout storyline with John Palmer? What's something you really enjoy doing?
Oh, I adored working with William McDonald, who played Jet, my son. Yeah. We had a tremendous, like all the young kids, as I say, they all keep in touch. And I love all of them. We just had so much fun because they're fresh and they're new, you can steal it. I really enjoyed working with my son like that. We would be in tears of laugh at the point where he threw up on me twice. He would laugh so much. The only actor to throw off me twice. I adored that. I just recently with Bridie Carter, when John was seduced by this woman, it was so much fun to play John's ego. Wow, she really thinks I'm hot. That was a delight. Bridie was a joy to work with. I've been lucky to work with tremendous actresses over the years with it. And any new guestie that comes in is met with great joy by us. It's a whole new person to explore, a whole new, it's Plus the oldies, the Ada Nicodemus, what a gorgeous person. Lynn McGranger, as I said, what you could not hope to find a nicer person in your life. How lucky am I to come across people like that with pure hearts and pure souls? It's just, it's a delight. So again, I'm just privileged.
It must be so nerve-wracking for a new member to come on the set, though, you know, of such an established show, but to have people like you to take them under their wing and, you know, and help them. And
Yes, you can see that. They come, oh my God. Our new policeman, played by Nick, I don't know, Nick's last name's just escaped me. He tells the story, well, his first day was a nightmare because we had boats coming in and body was Bridie Carter's body washing up on the beach, and he was a new copper and he really got hammered and he had to get, he thought he had a scene, Jimmy, James Stewart and me and myself and Nick. Damn, his name escapes me. He was saying, oh, I got a scene with Jimmy and Shane and I'm going to be really, really good at it and it'd be great because I'll feel really good about nailing it. These guys have been doing it forever. And so he arrived in the police car and just drove straight into the front of the pylon. It's just smash! He threw the door. That was just nerves from being with us. And you see it with a lot of people. The extras are fun too. I mean, as John's wandering around the surf club and doing stuff and muttering in the background, as I say, I always try and be eye contact. My name's Shane. I want to welcome people onto the set. But as a joke, I walked past one of the extras who was cleaning John's juice bar. I'm like, how are you doing? You're fired. You know, just a bit of nonsense in the background. And then the poor guy went to the second assistant after the scene and said, I think I've been fired. I think Shane fired me. In the what? No, Shane can't fire you. So what's the problem? Oh, he's been fired. No, he has. I'm just John firing you.
Oh, that's funny.
We're all playing a lot of fun. A lot of real malarkey happens here, but a lot of hard work too. Gee, by the end of the year, we're really hard. We're exhausted by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Have there been any storylines for John that you've disliked?
I know there have been. No, I can't off the top of my, sorry, off the top of my head, I can't. I mean, having a stroke was so hard, but I embraced that and worked really hard, and I'm very proud of what I did there. That's a beep. I enjoyed it, but no, I can't for the life of me think of one I dislike. I throw myself in and enjoy it.
I'm just keeping an eye on time, so we might move into a country practice because I know the fans will be dying for that. Now, that show made you a household name and gripped the hearts of the nation and Australia and beyond. You appeared in 367 episodes, I hope I got that right, from 1981 to 1986. Now, how did you get the role of Brendan Jones?
I was an unknown actor. I'd just come down from Brisbane, more or less, and was doing the little guesties here and there. And my agent at the time just said, look, there's an audition here for a show called A Country Practice. Would you be interested in it? I can barely remember. It's a long time ago. I can barely remember the audition, but I got it. And I was just absolutely thrilled to have a crack at Brendan. And I was lucky enough to be cast with Anne Tenney and the rest of that tremendous cast. That was a real one-off, that show. It was a freak, and it took off. And we had no idea it was so big. We just thought, oh, this is TV. This is just a show. We had no idea, really, until it was over, that it was such an enormous thing.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Still is as well.
Yeah, there it was. I think you forget that people are still watching it. You walk down the street. Oh, I saw you last night doing that, did you? Oh, right, okay. Amazing success, that show.
Did you actually get a character breakdown for Brendan?
Yeah. They're very, in my experience in television, character breakdowns are for an audition of two lines. You know, man, male nurse, nice guy, like that. They're very small. And then it's up to the actor to put everything you can into the guy to make the guy to make them, to be the man, to make the man believable and fun.
Yeah.
No big character breakdowns.
Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but at its height of its popularity, when it was on the air, A Country Practice attracted 8 to 10 million viewers a week. And at the time, Australia had a population of around 15 million. So it just goes to show that, you know, it was a massive show.
So big. We know of instances of, I think it was on 7 o'clock, in country towns, the pubs in the town would all be full until 10 to 7, then they'd empty. And then they'd come back an hour later, back to the pub, to talk about A Country Practice. It was huge. We had an open day in Brisbane. It was Meet the Cast of Country Practice Day in Brisbane at the height of the show. And off we go. We loaded a luggage. We flew to Brisbane. We arrived at the airport and we were met on the tarmac saying, the road to the television station is blocked for miles and miles and miles. We can't get you to meet everybody. So we put our bags with the limousines and they brought a helicopter in and then helicoptered us up to Mount Cooper. And we could see it was 8 deep and miles and miles and miles long. A bit like Beatles time. They were screaming and hysterical. And it was a huge, huge event for Brisbane. And then that's the way it remained. We had the paparazzis, in their trees and stuff like that. We became very famous. I think there was a survey that three most famous people in Australia at that time were Bob Hawke, Grant Dodwell, and Shane Whipping.
What?
And Bob's pretty good.
Yeah, Bob's all right. Ken?
Yeah, being a nurse, playing Brendan, did you enjoy playing that and would you have been good at that job in real life?
That's a great question. No, I would have been rubbish at it. I think all those years of playing Brendan, I still can't take a pulse. I can never find a pulse. The amount of compassion that I met, because we met with nurses, we met with, the hospital staff a lot to train us. We would go and watch operations. If we had
perform
an operation in A Country Practice, we would be taken to a hospital and gown up and look down and watch that operation to see how it was done. There's an awful Wendy O'Donnell was our medical researcher there, bless her. And so we put a lot of research into all that. No, I wouldn't have been a very good male nurse, but I did enjoy playing a nurse. I think I always secretly wanted to be a doctor. I want to glove up and go in, but I enjoyed all his stuff with the kids and his gentleness, and it got a tremendous response from people who became male nurses after watching ACP. And there were still people who contact me every day because of ACP, especially in Ireland and Europe. And they were just so besotted by it. It was such an idyllic, wonderful time in the 80s before things went sour in the world in many ways. Back in the 80s, it was all pretty rosy and we were just having fun and destroying the planet. Now it's a whole different world now that we're aware of what we've done. But I get contacted pretty much every day from people who just love it and thank us. And I'm so pleased that will be my legacy when I shuffle off the coil.
And it's still being released on DVD. I mean, they've got sales all over the world of...
Yeah, would like to see a bit of that, incidentally, if you're watching. It's never off air. I don't think it's ever been off air.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
The prisoner cast say the same thing too. The
Well, it's the actor's lot. You know why 50 Cent has got flat sides? So you can use a spanner to get it out of the producer's pocket. not all producers.
Now, getting on to... Brendan and Molly. There was no Brendan without Molly. They were pretty much a package and they were everyone's favourite couple of the 80s. Everyone loved them. So what did you think of Brendan and Molly?
Oh, I was just so privileged to work with Anne. And I fell in love with her, of course. She is funny. And we are married in real life. We're a couple. She keeps out of it, except when she adjusts my computer, as you saw earlier. We just clicked. It just worked so well. It was just, you didn't have to think about it. That was the nice thing. There was not a lot of discussion about how we're going to play this. It was quite raw and honest and real. It was very real.
It was
like what's happening to us. And gorgeous little Emily, our daughter Chloe. Again, we just had a fantastic rapport. That just so lucky that those people came together at that time and were in that frame of mind that we could play those very, very touching, delicate stuff, big stuff. We dealt with amazing things at a company practice. We dealt with all sorts of child abuse, drug abuse, just tremendous PTSD, veterans, Agent Orange. They were so bold, those writers. They dealt with so many things that was you know, sensitive at the time. And when you consider television's awesome power to educate, it's amazing. It just doesn't happen more often. And I remember the evenings in with the writers, in the only very small group of people put that show together. It's not like Home and Away, where it's large, huge. It was a very small group of very dedicated, very talented writers, editors, producers, and directors that put that together. And I'll forever, obviously, be forever grateful for that. To add my meager talents to that pool.
Definitely.
Can you tell us what the secret is to your relationship with Anne?
Fight it out. we have a very honest relationship. And as far as longevities go, the Bee Gees. I'm going to quote the Bee Gees. Give a little more than you're asking for. Just give a little more than you're asking for. It'll be all right. It's like every relationship. They're all complex. It's been a golden ride and ain't changing soon.
Was it a known thing at the time that you were together when you were working on the show, or was it? Yeah.
No, it leaked out. We never did. They always sort of hassled us with photographers and offered us money, and that's our business. So Annie's intensely private.
Yeah.
As am I, I don't want. That's us.
Yeah. And we do hope to have her on here. It would be amazing to speak to her one day soon, definitely.
Okay, I'll mention it to her.
Yeah. Ken.
What does Anne think about your longevity in Home and Away?
We've really discussed it. It's been very good for us. Keeps me out of the house. keeps me occupied and brings in a wage. We're great ones for just popping off for a weekend to a little farm we hire, or the Airbnb, and so that it provides us for that. It's made us secure. It's a nice balance. I don't work the young kids. It's Home and Away is a show about young people, and so I don't work that hard. They really pump the youngies. They really work them. But I don't work that hard. And so I think Anne's pretty comfortable with the amount of times I'm out and when I'm home.
Now, Brennan and Molly were really close friends with Simon Bowen and Vicky Dean. What was it like working with Grant and the late Penny Cook? Actually, I've just taken your question, Ken. Sorry.
Yes.
Oh, you just took it. Well, we're lifelong friends. You don't go through a thing like that where we became such huge stars. Not that we really knew it at the time. We knew we were famous. We didn't really know we were such, just how famous we were. And once you do that, you form a lifelong bond with people that can't be broken. Like we are the only people that went through that.
Yeah.
And so we're the only people who know what we did. It occurred to during a country practice and after, I got involved with World Vision, and I wrote and presented little documentaries for telethons in Australia in third world countries in war zones. It was the effects of war and poverty on children. And it was the one tiny film crew, and we went into Rwanda, we went to Uganda, we went to Cambodia, we went to the worst places on earth, and that also was a bond that we will never break. All those people involved in that were lifelong friends who will always be together forever, because nobody else had ever experienced what we experienced. So that we're working with Grant and Penny. Penny was a fireball, like she's a very determined girl, Grant's, again, very determined, very good actor, very funny. That's what the humour just kept us going, because we'd be exhausted. The hours we shot were inhuman.
How many hours were you shooting on a country practice?
Oh, no idea. We'd be up at 12-hour days. We'd wow. just 12-hour days. And then publicity, and then go out and party. I say to Anne now, I come home and go, I just need a 10-hour day. And back in the day, we'd do 10 hours and then party till get two and then get up in the morning. We worked very hard. And then halfway through the year, they'd line us all up and give us a vitamin B injection. Keep us going so we wouldn't get sick. And then a flu injection. Because wow. we were valued. There was no one in a country practice that was not nice to work with. We lost Lorraine Desmond this year. She was like our naughty auntie. And she was just extraordinary. Just what a delight to be able to work with that woman. Shane, Wendy, everybody. They were just nice. There was never any ego or, we'd always pull each other down if we thought we were getting above ourselves. And again, just a miracle that group of people got put together to make that show. Brilliant cast.
Yeah, amazing. Ken?
What did you most enjoy about playing Brendan?
Working with Anne and his lightness, his funny parts, in being the joker, getting a laugh. I've always enjoyed that. I like that. It gives me great pleasure. If I can make someone laugh, my job is done.
Yeah, definitely. And you can tell that. Did you have a favourite storyline on a country practice that Brendan was involved in?
Oh, the Molly death scene. I've said this routine a million times. They call it the Molly death scene, but really it's the Brendan grieving scene, because all Annie had to do was close her eyes in the chair. I had the kite, the kid, the dialogue, renamed. It's an issue with the family.
I've got to say, it was, you've probably spoken about it 1,000 times plus over the years, that scene, but it was one of the most, I was a kid at the time, I remember crying, and, it's probably gone down in history as one of the most memorable deaths on Australian TV. I'm sure it has.
It was. We see it today. Everywhere you go, they'll play it. But it still has a lot of punch to it. It still has a lot of punch to it. And I think it was only one take. I can't remember doing two takes.
Wow.
On the run up the hill, they just went, that's it, we're buying that. So there's all sorts of magpies all around this.
That's
screen. Cool. I'm distracted. There's about 10 magpies. I'm proud of it.
Do you remember whose idea it was to put all that together? You running through the paddock and the kite and Chloe.
I think that was Lynn Bayonis.
Okay.
She was our at the time, she was quite insistent on how we'd see such an important character out of the show. And you've got to give it to them. Yeah, it really worked.
Yeah, it did, definitely. So, that was Ken's question, was about the death scene. So Anne left the show in 1984. Was it her decision to leave? And how did you feel about her leaving at the time?
Yeah, Anne wanted to go. She felt it was time to go on and explore other things. I wanted to go too at that time, but James Davin said, no, hang on, we can't lose too many big characters. Do you want to hang around for a while? And I did. I wasn't reluctant to hang, but that partnership we had was so special. I didn't want to spoil it by doing other things. It was a shame to see you go. And I hung on for another 6 months or 8 months or a year or something, and then went off to do Willing and Able.
Wow.
You won a Logie Award in 1985 for Brendan. What was it like to win?
Wow, it was a big moment. It was a big moment. I was told that night I hadn't won it. Because there's always a bit of, at the Logie, there's always a bit of talk, a bit of table talk during the rounds. And the actors always know, if you're in the room and they're announcing the three nominees, the cameraman will swing around onto each nominee. There'll be a cameraman on each nominee. And if you look, the cameraman's looking through his eyepiece like that at the person. If his eye starts doing that, looking at the other person, he's getting ready to do the big swing when the announcement comes. So all the actors look at the cameraman and see what that eye is doing. I'd already been told, no, you didn't get it. I went, oh, I don't care. You know, easy come, easy go. And then, my name was called. And it's sort of a blur after that. I remember Grant saying when I walked, because Grant Dodwell presented me with the award. I remember him saying, mate, when you came up out of the audience, there was so much energy coming out of you, it nearly knocked me over. I was so thrilled to be recognised. And that was a vote by peers. So most popular was the audience, but best actor is voted by other actors who go, no, give him a tick for that. So I'm very pleased and very proud that I've won it. They sit over there, the Logies, and he's got three or something. The Logies sit on the shelf over there, but they go black. They tarnish very quickly. They're beautiful things, but they tarnish very easily. And you've got the choice. Do you have the Logie sitting on the shelf that looks a bit black, or do you run the risk of getting caught sitting at home one afternoon polishing your old Logie?
Someone to polish it for you.
I may be. I think we should send it in, get it varnished. But I'm always too scared that if I clean it, someone's going to walk in and go, what are you doing? Oh, come on.
And speaking of Logies, the Country Practice won 29 over its time, which is just, wow. I mean, that's amazing, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I wonder how many Home and Away have won. They must have won.
Look, they would have won a few as well.
There's rooms full of them, et cetera. 29, do you say?
Yeah, 29, yeah. Yeah.
Well, we gave the crew one because the crew are never recognised and we had such a lovely working relationship with our crew. We gave them one and they're all, gee, thank you. And they called it Gus, you know, Gus Logie. And so they actually, if you look, if you're that keen, if you look at a Country Practice, every now and then there will be a Logie in the background on one of the sets, on one of the cupboards or in the operating theatre. They're hidden, but they're there. So for any dedicated fans, if you're bored, watch the series again and see how many times you can see Gus turn up.
That sounds like Seinfeld. He used to get Superman and put a statue of Superman around the apartment.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea. Great idea. Great idea. Well, Gus turned up in quite a few episodes.
That's funny. Ken, we've answered my question, so we'll move to yours.
The show ran until 1994. Would you have liked to have gone back at any point?
No. No, I was gone. I think perhaps financially I would have gone. Oh, I would have liked a paycheck because there were some lean years after a Country Practice. Not many. I'm so lucky. I'd severed my ties and that's it. That's it. And because we're always linked to it. I mean, it's 40 years. I feel like Gilligan. I wonder how he felt. It's been 40-odd years since we've made the show. And obviously, it's a big thing, but they always pull me back. And even now, when they call me to do publicity for Home and Away, there's a Country Practice link to it. They go, we're doing this because of a Country Practice. And you think, gee, well, is it ever going to... It's not ever going to go away.
No.
Never going to go away. No, but when I left, that was it. I'd have enough.
Yeah. My question we already answered, but I do want to ask, what do you think of the remake when Channel 10 took it over, the Country Practice?
Yeah, no, Channel 10, wasn't it? What was it, 7? And then it was
on 7 and then 10 did a remake of it, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't really got an opinion. I didn't watch it. I was off making Willing and Able and other shows and it sort of skated by me. As I said, I was lucky enough to have an extraordinary run of television making.
Yeah.
Do you have any funny on-set stories or behind-the-scenes type gossip for our fans?
On which show?
On any show.
On any?
Well, Home and Away and Country Practice.
Country Practice. I could get killed for my off-screen gossip on the Home and Away. Just all sorts of hysterical things happen to us on every show because obviously you're in a remarkable situation of having props and cameras and animals and stuff. It was with Baz Luhrmann. Baz Luhrmann played the hearse driver for a little part, and he also played a drag queen in Willing and Able. Baz Luhrmann. Oh. If you go back and watch Willing and Able, he was the drag queen, and I've got a wonderful photo of me and Baz looking at each other like that. But Baz was playing the hearse driver in Wandon Valley, and Doris the pig was sick. And we had to get the pig to the vet, but there was no cars around. So we called the hearse, of course. And so out comes Baz Luhrmann driving the hearse. And we got, in those days, sadly, they sedated the pig. They knocked it out. Out you go. And slid it into the back of the hearse. And the man who owned the hearse, the actual guy, who had purple glasses on, I remember, round ones, he was horrified. This is a hearse. You can't have a pig in my hearse. Like, this is my business. No, well, sorry. Well, it's unconscious. Nothing is going to happen. My wife, Anne, was in the back seat. Pig was in the hearse. And we're shooting the scene. And the pig comes too. In a hearse. And freaked out. I don't know what the pig thought, but it jumped, it defecated all over the back of the hearse and jumped into the seat, in the back seat, with this man screaming, what are you doing? What are you doing? Get out of that pig, get that pig out of my car. Millions of things like that every day. You know, odd guest actors that would come in and not know their lines. I remember doing scenes holding up scripts like this, the guy for the other actor to go, hey, I think you're not such a good man. Yeah? Oh, and they come to me. And that's like everybody's drunk. Some are smoking in those days. We'd poke a hole, I used to smoke, poke a hole in our surgical mask for the rehearsal, have a cigarette while we're working our stuff. On the camera pedestals, there used to be ashtrays. On the camera, think how things have changed. You remember that. Occasionally see a bit of smoke. Oh, hang on, I've got to go again. But smoke. You get the cigarette. It was just such a different time. Such a different time. And then with Friday afternoon beers, which is no longer because... Yeah. They don't do it anymore, but on Friday afternoon, everybody would go to a loading bay. I don't know why I was in the loading dock. They'd all sit down and go, oh, phew, have a couple of beers. A lovely you know, bonding thing, talk about whatever, and then on our way. Those things don't happen anymore because of OH&S and things. And fair enough, because you can't have people driving away drunk. It's a different time.
Or sailing off in their boat.
True. And the other thing was that on a country practice with the club set, the club, where Cookie and Bobby were all the time, they put the keg on. So that was always shot on a Friday. Oh, and really? On Friday we'd go in and shoot the club set, and every beer that was pulled was real. And so everybody was drinking beer in the studio, and it was just, okay, good-o, and into the car and all drive home. Very different times. Thankfully, all changed now.
Well, maybe not so thankful.
The road toll, yeah. It was a very fun way to work. Fun way to work.
Yeah. Do you have a little bit more time? We've got some fan questions as well. Can you stick around a little bit longer? Yeah. Before we get to the fan questions, I do want to ask about Joyce Jacobs, who you worked with. What was it like?
Oh, Joyce.
Esme.
Oh, she was our mother. Yeah, she used to and her husband, Roger, I think, Roger. I didn't meet him often. They used to hop in a little small aircraft and fly. They were fly aviators.
Oh, wow.
Mm. And she was just, she delighted in playing Esme. And Esme, I mean, there's a band in Sydney called Esme and the Watsons. She's made such a mark on the lexicon of the Australiana. She's such a brilliant woman to work with, and she just nailed that person. She became Esme. She'd arrive as Joyce, but she'd arrive on set as Esme. Just beautiful. And the romance between Esme and Sid Haley.
They were brilliant. Yeah.
Just put the two together. It will write itself. Create interesting characters and just put them together. It just happened. You know, I think fondly often of her. She was a delight and just heart of gold.
Was she similar to her character in any way?
No, not really. No, yeah. She's a very sharp girl, very sharp woman, very dignified.
Yeah.
But Esme was just that little bit more embittered tribble. You know, she was marvelous. Joan Sidney was the other great actress.
Yes.
Who she was, wow, what a person. What an influence for timing, for us to learn timing from people like Joan. Wow, thank you. And we forget the training we got by working with terrific actors. We bring through great actors into that show, watch them how they work. John Million, we were doing warming up. We used to do voice warm-ups. And we were all in the green room one day going, la, 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 He says, oh, hi, Mr. Million. We're doing voice warm-ups. Would you like to join in? Would you like to do a voice warm-up? I just did. Okay.
John Million, John Million's brother, Bob, who was a director and so forth, was my best man at my wedding. And I was his best man at his wedding.
Oh, right.
So there's a name. Another name that comes to mind is Mike Murphy.
Yes. I don't have very many memories of Mike, but I know he was there.
He's a lovely bloke.
Oh, yeah. Bob Million was Rocket Robert. He got us home on time.
Yes. Yeah. Well, naturally, because the pubs would, you know, you had to get to the pub.
True, true. Or we wouldn't wait for the pub.
But that was such the 80s, wasn't it? The 80s was, you know, the knockoff drink after work, the Friday afternoon at the pub. You know, I mean, I was a child of the 80s, so I went through all that with my parents. And, you know, your mum had ringed the pub to see where your dad was, you know.
A time of excesses.
Yeah.
And now we get to some fan questions. This one comes from Jan from the Highlands of Scotland. And it's three things. Two questions, but she also wants to say, please say hi to the gorgeous James Stewart for me. I am a huge fan. Her questions are, who is your favourite character that you played, and do you have anything in common with any character you've played?
My favourite character was from Rain Shadow. I enjoyed playing him more than anything because he was a real character. He was nothing like Shane. The character I enjoy playing most would have to be John, because as I say now, do I have anything in common? As I said earlier, John is my alter ego. He shows greedy, jealous, envy, all those things I try and hide. But in John, I can play it, get it out there. It's very therapeutic playing John. Thank you for your question.
Do you think John would polish his Logie?
Oh, yeah. He'd wear it around his neck.
Jay Shaw said, what was it like working in the UK on the sitcom Roy's Raiders? I remember someone pointing you out to me when I was watching. Must admit, I didn't recognise you at first. And can I also, well, we just covered Joyce Jacobs, so that was that question. But, yeah, Roy's Raiders.
Roy's Raiders, my goodness. Yes, my dear friend Michael Aitkins is a tremendous writer. He writes Midsummer Murders and things like that and lives on an estate on the Isle of Jersey now. Said, hey, do you want to play an Australian in my series? Oh, yeah, okay, sure. So I jumped on a plane. I couldn't get a direct flight to England. I had to fly around the world. I had to go America and go around like that to get in junket, like a milk run. And I arrived the night before we started shooting, like at 3 in the morning at not Heathrow, the other airport, and arrived on set. He said, okay, you're very late, but we're shooting now. And I had no sleep for 48 hours or something. Just go in, there's your wardrobe. And the very first scene was a fight scene at garbage cans and lids in a London back street with this guy, William Vanderpree, throwing punches at me, and most of them landing because I was just too tired to get out of the way. And the rest of the time we were on motorbikes driving around London, and then we'd shoot live. We'd shoot all the location, a different way of shooting. And then we'd come back in and shoot the rest of the stuff live in front of a live audience. So they'd bring the audience in. And in England, talking about the 80s, we'd rehearse it. We'd get it ready to go. They'd cut in the location stuff to show on screens. Then we would go out and they'd bring the audience in, shoot it in front of the audience like a play. But all the cast in the BBC would go up to floor 3 where there was just this enormous bar, and they'd be throwing down schooners of Guinness before they go and shoot the show. And I was just, there's no way we would shoot before, drink before we shoot anything. And the old actors said, oh, no, love it. It was old English theatre actors that were in the show. Said, no. Always have a thick flask of port wine and brandy. Calms the nerves. Very funny. Very different way of shooting, but a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
All of them. Darren Hembrow says, awesome, a great actor. He recalls the Molly death scene in A Country Practice, and it's fantastic. And as the great Mr. Palmer in Home and Away, the expression on his face when Gina died, purely heartbreaking. I'd love to ask, what was it like to work with Sonia Todd? She was great as Gina.
Oh, just how lucky am I? I remember I made a show, a telly movie years before. Can't remember the name of it. Isn't that good? To have films you can't remember. Forget the name of the show. But I remember Sonia Todd was in it, and I was such a fan of Sonia that I got someone to take a picture, and there was me, and I stood next to Sonia, and I was proud to be next to such a great actress on that level. And then when she was cast as my wife, we had a ball. Her timing is impeccable. And when we shot the John Gina scenes, when the producers come in to look at the rough edit, and they take notes of what the actors are doing, they've got their little pencil and paper, saying not good enough, bigger, smaller. John Holmes, who was the producer at that time, I was told, he'd come in to watch us, and then John and Gina appeared on the screen. He'd put his notebook down, and that was no greater honour for us to go to the producers, just let them do what they want. And I was very sorry to see her go. And when she died, it was just such a tragic. Seemed to have a career of dying wives. It only just occurred to me. But when she died, young William McDonald, he was only a boy playing our son, our stepson at the time. It was just a wide shot on a road. She had an embolism. And little William was standing next to me. It was all done in wide shot. And when we realized she was dead, he just dropped. He just collapsed. And I just caught him on the side of the road and take him off. It was just all on wide. It was, yes, you're right. That was an amazing, amazing storyline.
Yeah. Wow. Where do you draw? What do you draw on to play those type of scenes? Just as a question to you, like, is there an emotion?
I don't know. Someone else asked me that the other day. I just don't know. I don't have an answer for that. I don't know. You got to be the guy. I say to the young actors that turn up, don't worry about what you look like. That's lighting, camera, wardrobe, makeup. They will do all that. Don't worry about your angles. They'll look after it. Be the guy. Yeah. Be that guy that's happening now. I can't explain it any other way. But for me, I don't like it when I finish the scene and I was aware of everything I was doing, waiting for cues and stuff. For me, when I've got John firing properly or any character firing properly, it's action. And you go in, you be the guy, and the guy happens, and then you hear cut, okay, let's stop. That sounds a bit pretentious, but that's, for me, when you're not aware, when it just happens, that's the nice to be. Yeah. You're not thinking about cues and stuff. And I say to the young actors, when you turn up, I know learn your lines is obvious, but just put them, as Annie says, put them in your bones. Put them in your bones so you don't even have to think about what you're going to say, because that's the very basic thing you're doing here, you're acting. Learn, then do something with them. When you know them backwards, then you can go and not worry about that and be the guy.
Wow, great advice. Steve Bellamy said, hello, Shane. You're a legend of Australian television. You and your wife, Anne Tenney, made A Country Practice great in its early days. Just a question about Sid Halen, who played Cookie. It's fair to say Sid liked a drink. What was it? Was that true?
Yes. And he would never go to bed. He never stopped. And I was in my 20s, obviously, during that. And I remember we were in Renmark for some reason, doing a publicity thing. And we'd had a long day. They were big days. Publicity days are grinding. And I'd gone to bed. And I remember going, the Renmark, the tiny little town, had shut. No one else was there. It was 10 o'clock. It was shut. I'd gone to bed. I remember bang, bang, bang. Hey, get up. What's wrong with you? You call yourself young. There's a town 50 miles away. The pub closes at midnight. Are you coming? No. He was just a firecracker. The rabbit with the drum. He was the best guy. Never stopped. He was very fun.
Yeah.
That was fit. And he liked to drink. Oh, yeah.
Peter Poyter Strauss says, oh, wow, what a great next guest. Shane, you were a part of one of Australia's most iconic TV scenes. How hard was it to film Molly's death scene? And how many, well, we know it was only one take.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, it, if we had known that that scene was to be immortalized and just forever played again, probably would have put a little bit more thought into it. As we say, we operated on that raw level where we just try to be the person, try and be, this is what would happen. We did one take on the Brendan running up the hill, I believe, because it was complex too, the kite, the kid, little Emily. And I don't know, I'm pretty sure it was one to hip gesturing. I'm pretty sure it was one take on Annie as well. It wasn't hard to shoot. It was just our job to do that. But we at the time didn't know that we were creating the highest rating moment in the history of Australian television. We were just kids. Somebody said, you were all dipsticks like our kids were at 26. We were.
I mean, there was also a question from Ollie James as well, Ken, was about Molly's scene and Joyce Jacobs. So we'll go on to the next comments.
This is a comment from Cheryl Squire Farrelly, who says, I named my son Brendan and our beautiful dog was Molly.
Well, I'm glad. If ever you lose your dog, I can come and go, Molly! I can come and find it for you. I'm pretty good at it. I've had a bit of experience. That's nice. There are a lot of Brendans around.
Yeah.
People say, oh, yeah, I'm cool. I'm Brendan. They go, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't do it.
Zara Barry said, do you prefer John with Gina or Maz?
Oh, I couldn't possibly comment on that question. There'd be fireworks forever. I'm very lucky to have worked with some of the best actresses Australia has to offer. And I think as a humble male, I'll keep out of that one with great respect. They're both fabulous.
We understand.
Tony Michelle says, hi, Shane. Which show has been the most enjoyable to work on?
Oh, they're all good. I mean, I've had a ball. You know, I love working. I love what I do and I love everything I do. Look, A Country Practice was eye-opening and amazing for all the things that happened to all of us. Willing and Able was our new bold venture into television, you know. Dog's Head Bay was an attempt at doing Australian satire. Rain Shadow, Flying Doctors. I loved playing all these people. Rain Shadow, I adored him very much. I loved playing that man. And of course, I wouldn't be playing John Palmer now if I didn't love him. I'd just be such a dag. I just enjoy being so wrong, but convinced he's right. I love it. So thank you. They've all been fun. The favourites, Brendan, John, maybe. Good fun.
Yeah. All been great. Sal Lovell said, hi, Shane. Which TV show did or have you never appeared in but would like to be in?
Doc Martin.
Ah, yes.
Or Hawaii 5-0 or White Lotus. What show would I like to be? Deadwood. Many Deadwood people. I'd like to play some damn character there in Deadwood, killing people. Too hard. I want to be at every show.
And I do have a question that everyone wants to ask is, what was Fatso really like to work with?
God, dangerous. There were several Fatsos and several Dorises, but Fatso would be brought into the green room if he was doing studio work in a big box from Featherdale Wildlife Sanctuary. Oh. And it was like 8-ply. It was quite a strong plywood box with a drawbridge thing he got out of, a little hole that he could poke his nose through and look at you with a beady little wombat eye. But all day, all you would hear would be grum, 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 and chew his way out of the box. So the hole he'd poke his eye through in the morning, he's going to get out and he would bite. And if he was left running around, he would run up and nip you. So you'd often see, on all the goof takes, you can see people going, oh, the wombat. And stick around the back of the set and bite you. Now, he was a pain. And Doris was complex too. She was a big pig towards you. It was a big animal to work with, especially if it was a bit cranky. And the two other guys that looked after Doris, one of them was on the Dam Busters flood.
He
was a Dam Buster. He was an old war hero. And they were both very, very dry with their humour. And I remember one day being, it was really hot, and Doris was panting and lying on the ground. And one of the old farmers said, "Oh, go and get some water and pour it on her." And so he's got this bucket of water, he's about to pour it on Doris to cool her down. The other guy says, "Well, if you do that, you'll set the tap around her kidney to kill her." "Oh, I won't do that." These weird people that bring their pigs to work. It's a Dam Buster.
Wow. Amazing.
We've come to the end now.
No, we haven't. I'm going to go on forever.
No, go any more, please.
Can you tell us what else you're up to at the moment? And are you involved in any other projects that we could help promote?
Oh, that's very sweet. No, I have my heritage activism, my sailing, and my family. And at the moment, that's really lovely. The show, heritage, I play bad guitar, and no more shows. But if I do, I'll be on the YouTube promote.
Yeah. Now, can I just say thank you from the bottom of our heart for you coming on? You've been an absolute gentleman from, you know, the start when we asked you to come on, and it's just been amazing to have you on and to learn about your life and career and everything else. It's it's been an absolute pleasure.
And lovely to meet you too. So I hope we can meet at another time and share a beer and share some tales about your history in the television as well.
We will, definitely. That was episode 7 of Talking Prisoner Presents. Thank you for watching. If you could please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel and share the videos where you can. Also like our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. And this episode will also be available across all the podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and the talkingprisoner.com website. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Shane.
Wow. Good night, everyone. Thanks, guys. I'm out of here.
Thank you, mate. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Great pleasure. Bye-bye.